Chapter 34, What Had Happened to Turakina, and Good Fortune's Long Speech. Good Fortune and Affliction sat in the yurt, eating the food which Turakina had prepared for them, and Christian, Big Tiger, and Seven Stars were there too. They were waiting for Nidong to tell the news, but he was silent. Turakina was crouched in the half-dark near the door, and she didn't even ask, "Have you had a good journey?" She hung her head as if she had done something wrong, yet everything was in order. The sheep were in the fold, the camels and the cows were tied up, the fire was burning, and the food had not been burnt. But there was a strange brown horse with a light-colored tail and mane tied to the line between the rust-red trees. Christian and Big Tiger had noticed it at once, and Seven Stars was quite alarmed, and Turakina's horse, on which she had come, was missing. "It's always like that," said Affliction gloomily. "Wherever I am, something bad happens. Either the pole star is seen at midday, or the sun shines at midnight." "Nothing bad has happened," Nidong reported. "It's true I fell into the water because the dog ran away from Turakina, but on the other hand, she has got a splendid horse in place of an inferior one." "How did that happen?" asked Seven Stars, looking at Turakina, who began to cry. "Oh, please don't cry," murmured Good Fortune. "It can't be as bad as that. Tell us so that we may know, just as if we had been here ourselves," ordered Nidong. "It wasn't my fault," sobbed Turakina. "Nobody said it was," said Nidong. But this didn't comfort Turakina. "This is," she began to stammer, "how it was. If you had come a few minutes sooner, you would have seen the llama, too. Although his horse was almost exhausted, he rode up at a gallop. When he leaped from the saddle, he threw the reins in my face, shouting, 'There!' I wanted to run away, but I couldn't, for he gave me such a look that I could only stop where I was. He was like a dried-up tree with a brown bark, and his beard was waving in the wind. His eyes were restless and glittered queerly. He took the bridle and the saddle off his stallion and ordered me to put them on my horse. While I was doing this, he talked to his horse as if it were a human being. Then he tied it to the line. 'Are you ready?' he shouted, and I answered, 'Yes, sir.' 'Your horse is no good,' he shouted. 'I don't think you'll see it alive again. Give me a whip.' I fetched my own, for he didn't have one. 'Does the man who is called Picture Sheet live here?' he asked. And when I nodded, he said, 'You can tell him I don't take a stone for a man's head, even if it is pushed into a loophole. And tell him to take care of my stallion, as if he were Boso Fabo, until moonlight come. He's to ride him.' As he said this, he gave my horse such a blow that she reared and galloped off, but he turned back and threw me 2 gold pieces. 'This is for your mare,' he shouted. 'You may keep it, even if you get her back.' And he rode off. And then you came, and you could have seen him if he hadn't been gone." "Very likely," said Affliction, "but it's all the better for us. We haven't seen him."
"I'd have given him a piece of my mind," cried Good Fortune, "on good and bad manners. I'd have asked him whether he knew how to salute a person, and I'd have recited the rules of the Mongol joss to him. Show me those 2 gold pieces," he asked Turakina.
Turakina passed them, and he turned them over and over.
"I don't know this sort of money," said he, "so it can't be worth much."
"Those 2 pieces are imperials," declared Nidong. A note says, "Imperial, a Russian coin of the Tsarist regime. In olden days, you could get a horse for 1 of them."
"The old days are not today," said Good Fortune scornfully.
"Today," retorted Nidong, "many people give 2 horses for a gold piece like 1 of these."
"Then the fellow's crazy," cried Good Fortune. "He knows nothing of the rules of life. He's unacquainted with the Mongol joss, and he's ignorant of the value of money."
Nidong shook his head. "That man," he said, "ignores the conventions. That is his pride. He thinks no more of gold and silver than of the stones by the wayside. That is his security. He prefers to speak with horses and dogs than with human beings. That is because he is full of grief."
"Father," cried Seven Stars, horrified, "you are speaking of the venerable chief."
"Yes," said Nidong, "that's the man I'm speaking of, for that's the man who was here." When Nidong said this, absolute silence fell on the gathering. Each one was wondering whether danger threatened now, and if so, what it was. After a silence which seemed very long, Nidong said, "Forget that I spoke of Dampignac. What is good for him is not good for all, and whether or not it is good for him, only heaven knows."
"My word," said Good Fortune gruffly, "you make as much fuss about the venerable chief as if he were the Yellow Emperor, whereas he's just an ordinary red beard."
"He is an unhappy man," said Nidong solemnly. Seven Stars went out to bring the poodle a few bones and bits of meat she had secretly been saving for him. The stallion was standing in the moonlight, trembling from head to foot. His thick head was held in the halter. The halter was tied to the line, and the line was pulled taut. Although she was frightened, Seven Stars went up to him and loosened the reins. The stallion looked up and snorted, but as soon as he found that he could do so, he lay down. "What a monster that man is," thought Seven Stars. "He rides a fine horse nearly to death, he beats my dog with a whip, and he's a prince." Then she turned back to the yurt, where they had all lain down to sleep. Next morning, Nidong and Seven Stars were up before sunrise. "Do you get up as early as this every morning?" asked Christian.
"The night is over," answered Seven Stars, surprised, "so one must get up."
"One could remain in bed," said Christian. Seven Stars shook her head.
"That wouldn't do," she said firmly. "What's the sun for?"
"It's still behind the mountains."
"That's just why," said Seven Stars, and she pounded the brick tea in the mortar.
When they were all sitting round the kettle, drinking their hot tea and chewing millet, Good Fortune made a long speech. It began, "We have resolved," meaning Nidong and himself, "and it ended with, and that then is our decision." Between these statements, he told them what to do with the money which the old Marin was to bring. "Put it away in the chest," Good Fortune said, "until Nidong and I come back again. It's no longer the silver it was before. It has been changed into just ordinary money, for which Nidong is to sell us 5 camels. For we can't wait until someone is daring enough to venture through the desert again in a horseless car to look for us. We might have to wait 10 years for that, and we've got only 5 days.
4, said Nidong.
"Counting today, it's 5, said Good Fortune. "But 4 days will be enough time to fetch the 5 camels we need. Then we shall set out for Xinjiang, and affliction will come with us."
"Wherever I am," Affliction began,
but Good Fortune cut him short. "Would you prefer to remain here until Springtime Snake or a soldier from the Yamen shoots you dead before you have time to open your mouth and say I'm innocent? That would be a sticky end, I may tell you. So we'll set out 4 days from now, and we'll travel in comfort this time, for of course we'll take your blue tent. I'm looking forward to the journey, even if we have to watch out to keep from being caught by the venerable chief. Then, in 50 days, he concluded cheerfully, we'll be in Urumqi." Nidong tucked a big bottle away in his saddlebag and warned Seven Stars to beware of the stallion. "Don't try to hobble him," he said, "or he'll trample you to death."
"I'll be careful," promised Seven Stars. "Big Tiger and Christian will mind the sheep and the camels. Affliction will do the cooking, and we'll all be all right."
"Bolna," said Nidong. Then he rode off with Good Fortune to fetch 5 good camels from the spring pastures on the Nojin Bogdo.